CataractCoach.com podcast series, episode number 146, with Dr. David Cohn-Bitron, successfully managing open globe injuries from an incredible surgeon and a true expert in ocular trauma. Welcome back to our Cataract Coach podcast. Today, I've got a very special guest who's going to teach us, especially me, a lot about tough cases involving ocular trauma. And that is my good friend, Dr. David Cohn-Bitron. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you, Dai. Thank you very much.
So I met you for the first time, actually, very recently in Cordoba, Argentina, where you gave a great lecture. You had some incredibly difficult, challenging cases that I said, wow, I've got to learn more from you. So tell us first about your path in ophthalmology. We know you're in Santiago, Chile, but how did you get involved in this?
Well, I was trained in Adassa Medical Center in Israel. I did my residency over there, and then I stayed for my vitreoretinal fellowship for 2 years. Over there, I had like amazing mentors with taught me like all the secrets and details of the surgical skills. But also what I appreciate a lot, and also I think in your videos you also do, is transmit the surgical thinking. The critical thinking, always try to improve and question ourselves if we are doing the correct way, or if there's something new or a different way to do the same, or to get a better outcome.
That's for sure. That's absolutely. We got to keep learning. Now, what I liked about your cases was you actually do a lot of ocular trauma,
yeah,
which is unusual for most of us, like me included. I did a lot of trauma during my residency or my training or your fellowship. But then when you go into your practice later in life, most surgeons don't get exposed to as much trauma. I haven't done a ruptured globe in 10 years. You have an incredible expertise and you still do a lot of ocular trauma now. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so I work basically in two parts. One is the private practice where I do usual retina and high volume cataract surgery. And then in the hospital, I worked for a different insurance that we have here in Chile called, it's like a mutary health system for just for workers, for labor injuries.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very good health system where they have a everything is covered. There's no need for payment for getting surgeries or seeing the doctors, and we have a lot of resources over there to do high tech surgeries and involving as many surgeries as we need to get through each case.
Wow, that's so great.
So I'm doing almost every week one. Intraocular foreign body, ruptured globe.
Wow. Every week?
Yeah. This week I had like two intraocular foreign bodies. One came with an endophthalmitis.
Oh my goodness. Wow. So yeah, obviously your experience is tremendous. You also have the benefit of having done a retina fellowship. So when I was teaching my residents, I did not do retina fellowship. So when I have a patient with an intraocular foreign body, I can fix the anterior segment, but I still need my vitreoretinal colleagues to do the part of plan of vitrectomy and get out the intravitreal foreign body, et cetera.
Yeah, I think for especially for trauma, it's a very good thing being able to have some background in vitreoretinal surgery. But also it's very important to manage the anterior segment quite well, because you need to usually, if you want to take the foreign body out, there's a traumatic cataract and you need to know how to manage it. Usually I prefer to take the intraocular foreign bodies through the limbus, so I usually take out the cataract even though there's not much cataract in some cases. In other cases there's a very early white cataract with a ruptured capsule, anterior and posterior, so it's always a surprise.
Right. That's the thing with trauma, is you never know what you're going to get.
Exactly. It's kind of a puzzle.
Right. It's always a surprise. Now, you were saying you like to bring out an intravitreal foreign body up through the patient has a ruptured posterior capsule. Obviously, you can go right through it.
Yeah,
So
but sometimes you don't know when it goes through the sinews. So
yeah.
the two cases I had this week, one came with a 20/20 vision and an intraocular foreign body, a young patient with a clear lens. So
Oh
the
boy.
thing went through the cornea, then the sinews, and it was stuck in the temporal retina. So he is young, and the lens looked quite okay. I did a scleral approach, and I just took it through the pars plana. He did excellent, and he's restored his vision a couple of days after. Did okay. And the other, he was an older patient, about 6 years old. He had a foreign body 2 or 3 days before he came to visit us. So he came with a 3 millimeter hypopyon with a dense vitreous and everything. It was Friday night, so we said, should we inject him or we go directly to the OR? I said, no, let's do it. He's gonna lose the eye. And it went really well. I took out the cataract. Then the capsule wasn't ruptured, the posterior one, so I just opened it with a vitrectomy, took out the foreign body through limbus, and I'm planning on afterwards implanting a three-piece IOL, probably in sulcus with a optic capture in the rexus.
Interesting case. So obviously, in the case with endophthalmitis, we don't want to put an IOL in the eye.
Immediately, no, I think it's better to
Let
do it
the
two
infection
steps.
resolve, right? But what if you have a case like, let's say, traumatic, only intersegment, let's say, puncture the lens capsule. So now they have an intralenticular foreign body. Nothing, puncture capsule intact, vitreous is fine. There's no evidence of endophthalmitis. Is it reasonable? When you do the suturing of the cornea, take out the lens, put an IOL at that time, or should you come back again?
Well, I think it's reasonable both ways, but what we usually do is close, treat him with antibiotics, IV, and if there's some signs of endophthalmitis, maybe even intravitreal.
Sure.
It depends on each case. And usually after the primary closure, we wait until the cornea clears up. And we plan the phaco with a lens implant. So we have all the options for the
So,
second surgery to have a
more options.
myometry and exams and ultrasound and everything that we need to make sure that's the only thing he needs.
So, on a simpler case like I explained, with a corneal laceration and maybe a punctured lens capsule,
Oh, you can
just,
go in straight, yeah.
but you can also just close the cornea, let it heal up, wait a month or so, then get
Maybe a
better
couple of weeks.
biopsy.
If it's not getting inflamed, sometimes you get the anterior capsule opening and there's no inflammation, not like significant inflammation for a long time.
Right. Because yeah, we would do it when I was a resident, either direction, either just close the cornea, close the rupture, let it heal up for a little bit of time, a few weeks at least. Or in the other times, we said, listen, the patient's here. Let me just do biometry of the other eye, maybe add a half diopter or one diopter, IOL at the same time.
Yeah, I think both ways managing it depends in each case, but both ways are okay. Yeah,
Yeah, like I said, I
totally agree.
guess, like you were saying with trauma, it's always a surprise. It kind of depends
It's
on the
always a
case.
surprise. Yeah,
Now,
maybe in that case you plan that it's going to have only the anterior capsule opening, and then in the middle of the surgery you're going to realize that the posterior one was also open. So
yeah,
you
you
have to
sometimes
be prepared
roll.
for a vitrectomy in every case,
No,
or
I think
almost
you
every
should.
case.
Oh no, for sure, because you never, even though you examined at the slit lamp
Yep.
before, you can never fully tell.
Exactly.
Know, of course, makes a lot of sense. Now, for the most common thing you see probably is what intraocular foreign body. If they're younger patients who are like working construction, must be IOS.
Yeah, it's construction, it's hammering steel versus with steel, and then they get the steel splinter inside. Usually goes directly through the cornea.
Yeah, somehow when you're hammering and you get the steel splinters, like the eye must be a magnet. It attracts everything right to the eye.
Yeah,
It'll never go
exactly.
to the nose or the forehead. It always goes right to the eye.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's funny how that
Well, I
works.
also got last week, no, 2 weeks ago, it was a horrible trauma case. Young, 25 years old, he was cutting steel with this what's the name? The like an electric motor
Oh,
to like
grinder.
a saw, like a grater.
Yeah.
But the whole thing exploded, and those things work. The disc
Yeah.
broke, and he got like, I don't know, a lot of splinters and foreign bodies, and it was almost like an explosion. I think these discs go around at 8,000 RPM, so it's really fast. And when they explode, it's almost like an explosion to the eye. He was even wearing protective goggles, and they broke. And I took out pieces of the discs and the plastic of the goggles and everything from inside the cornea and the sclera and everything, also the eyelids. It was a mess. And actually, this week I tried and went in to see if there's something to do with the retina, because he had like a closed funnel detachment, that it was one of the first cases. I really couldn't do much.
Yeah, that's really tremendous trauma. So he had multiple then
Multiple,
foreign bodies.
yeah.
Wow. Yeah, I guess the eye can only take so much.
And the force of the impact, it's also important. Like in this case, it's the sharp, but also the blunt of the explosion. So it creates much more damage.
Wow, that's terrible. Yeah, poor guy was already wearing safety glasses, but obviously it's not enough.
Yeah, exactly. Sometimes it's not enough.
Wow, so that just must be tough to talk to the patient even, because the patient expects you to fix it,
They always do. They always do. But there are
right?
some good patients, and sometimes what I always say, like positive patients, positive thinking patients, they always do the best. So it's also a very good thing to always think
Yeah,
positively, in a positive way. Yeah.
for sure. But the tough part is setting appropriate expectations, because the patient thinks.
Always.
So
That's.
how do you talk to a patient about this?
Well, I just say like I'm sorry, but I'm gonna talk like in simple words. You just got your eye exploded. If we leave it like this, it's a lost eye. We're gonna try to do everything to recover the eyeball, sight, vision, as much as we can. If we need to do one, two, three surgeries, we're gonna do everything that we can do. But I cannot promise you we're gonna fix the eye and recover the vision you used to have. Like, it's not
Right.
always possible.
No, that's for sure. Now, you have so much experience with trauma. When we were doing trauma cases, we'd always tell the patient about the risk of future sympathetic ophthalmia. Have you
Yeah,
ever
I
seen
know.
it? Have you seen it?
We have one or two cases from a long time ago. We don't. We, it's not as common as I think it was described in the textbooks.
Right.
I don't see it that often.
Yeah, because it was so we just they talked about they taught us so much about it, but I've never
Yeah.
seen a case ever.
Yeah.
Well,
That's
then
true.
I guess that's a good thing then.
I think so. Maybe it's the surgeries are less traumatic. Maybe incisions, because of smaller incisions or faster surgeries and use of early steroids. I don't know, but something changed the number of these cases for sure.
Right, I think it's different now than previously,
Yeah.
but also yeah, it's probably like you're saying, are different techniques here. We have very early intervention, and obviously a lot we have for us more precise surgery, more smaller incisions, less invasive. So maybe it's a better thing.
Yeah.
So what other traumas are you seeing as well? You must be seeing like full, even like orbital fractures. You must be seeing like big traumas as well, right?
Yeah, we see with orbital fractures, eyeball dislocations, everything. But then there's the oculoplastic teams that take care of that. Yeah, so they.
Yeah, no, thank goodness for that. So you're primarily...
When I'm in on-call and I have a eyelid laceration, I have to go and fix it to the hospital. Yeah. So I know how to manage the basics of the eyelids, but then
But then the orbital fracture, that can wait a few days.
No, that can wait. Yeah, we don't fix it immediately. Yeah. And there's a lot of inflammation and things going on. So usually it takes a couple of months before that surgery.
Right. So primarily just closing the globe. Now, do you also see late trauma? So let's say a patient had some blunt trauma and then develops traumatic cataract after a few months.
Sure. In this hospital, once you got in because of a trauma, you are followed up for your entire life.
So
sometimes we get this, I don't know, 1983 trauma that now comes with a cataract, and he has, I don't know, 180 sonodolysis. So, and the trauma was a long time ago. He has a hard cataract, and we have to manage it.
So you also, in the U.S., sometimes the vitreoretinal colleagues do just mostly vitreoretinal surgery, but you are a lot of other ophthalmologists, you do the whole eye then. So you do a lot of cataracts, a lot of retina surgery, everything.
Probably I do more cataract than retina cases, for sure.
Right. Yeah. So then you get a lot of these very challenging cataracts, like you were saying, the 180 degrees, zonular loss.
Yeah, zonular loss, dropped nucleus, or a lot, very... I don't know, they referred to me low endothelial count with a very shallow chamber. And sometimes it's good to have to be able to do a small vitrectomy before those cases, or sometimes I just manage them, I don't know, with mannitol and viscoelastics and using not a lot of ultrasound to take them out.
So if you have that case with a very, very shallow anterior chamber and you decide to do a little bit of a pars plana vitrectomy to make some room, how do you know how much to do? Do you just do a little bit and then try to fill the AC and then a little bit more, you step by step?
As a mentor said, you have to use the force. That's the only way. Yeah, I know, you never know. You just start doing a little bit vitrectomy and touch the eye and until it loosens up a little bit, then you put visco and you see the anterior chamber deepening much more, and you can work much easier. I don't have much cases that I have had to do the vitrectomy, but I have a couple. I had a really tough case where she had like pressure of 60, 50, and you cannot bring it down with anything. And she had like this phacomorphic glaucoma, very advanced. And I tried with mannitol and drops before surgery, didn't went down. The cornea was clear, so she was used to this pressure. And then I waited the whole morning in the pre-op to try to bring the pressure down, but it didn't. So at the end, I just did a little bit of vitrectomy, and the surgery went as usual.
Yeah, that's a good point. We have cases like that on Cataract Coach where I think probably the most important thing is when you're doing it, just do a little vitrectomy for a few seconds. Mm-hmm. Then with your paresthesia, inject a little viscoelastic, see how much you get, then do a little bit more. Just do a little
bit. Exactly. Yeah. And you leave the trocar in, and at the end, on those cases, I like to do, after I implant the lens, posterior capsulotomy with a hyalidectomy, just to make sure you're not going to have a malignant glaucoma afterwards, because these short eyes are difficult and might give us surprises.
Yeah, that's actually a good point to do that at the same time. Now, how do you, one question though, if you have a very short eye, nanophthalmic eye, 17, 18, 19 millimeter axial length, how do you know where is pars plana?
Oh, that's a tough question. Probably nobody knows. Probably it's a little bit closer to the limbus as well as in the high myopes that you can have more of a further away from the limbus. Yeah.
Right. So I guess that's why it's so important. Then if you're going to do this pars plana approach, you better then check for entry site breaks.
Yeah.
Which I think anterior segment surgeons maybe not as good as checking for those the entry site breaks.
Mm-hmm.
So for what your favorite technique now for scleral fixation of an IOL?
For scleral fixation, I like 4-point Gore-Tex fixation with a like bunny lens with mm-hmm.
With eyelets. Four,
yeah. Yeah, that's the one I like the most. I think it's very stable. You can even do toric, and you can really center the IOL where you want. Right. And the Gore-Tex, it's pretty easy to make the knots and bury it. And what you have to turn the knot inside the eye, because that's the main problem. Then you get like exposure of the sutures afterwards, but I like that technique. Yamani, I think it's easier to see than to do, as everything.
Yeah,
I got some good experience with it, but then I also had like late complications of tilting and sometimes haptic optic disjunctions inside the eyes. And so I thought it's for me, in my hands, I prefer the Gore-Tex fixation. Yeah,
in here in Los Angeles, like the retina colleagues that I work with also have kind of stopped doing Yamane, and now also prefer, in the US we use this the Bausch & Lomb lens with the four eyelets, and the same mm-hmm. thing with the Gore-Tex.
Because the Acuros lens.
Yeah. The Gore-Tex will last forever.
Yeah.
And then with 4-point fixation, the IOL is really strongly fixated and you don't get any tilt of the lens. Mm-hmm. There's no twisting of it. It stays in position.
Yeah. And so, these round haptics also, they act like little springs. So if you tighten them up a lot, there is some space for over-tightening and
right.
Yeah.
And then also very easy to center the lens. We've yep. seen some Yamane patients where if you don't have the haptics precisely placed, then the lens mm-hmm. is decentered.
Yeah. Yeah.
The other thing, too, mm-hmm. a lot of our patients, we noticed that a lot of the patients who had Yamane without a full vitrectomy end up getting chronic macular edema, cystoid macular edema.
Oh, wow.
Because I think anterior segment surgeons, if you don't do a full vitrectomy, oftentimes when you manipulate the IOL for Yamane, you're getting vitreous strands caught in the haptics. And
maybe,
then you
yeah.
get vitreous traction.
Maybe, yeah, the haptics in the going through the ciliary body or maybe close to it, maybe yeah. reacts.
So yeah, now these days, I actually just refer these to my retina colleague who does a full pars plana vitrectomy. And then yeah. the 4-point
Well, the other option, which is pretty good, it's the aphakic artisan lens, the claw lens.
The iris clip lens. Yeah, we don't yeah. have it in the U.S., unfortunately.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
In the U.S. is more limited. Lens. Yeah, that's a nice technique. I've seen it. We have so many videos of it on Cataract Coach. But the problem is, in the U.S., you just cannot get the lens.
You cannot get it. Yeah. Well, I don't use it that much because usually the irises are not in good shape. Also, so
they've also suffered. Of course, they've also suffered damage.
Yeah.
For sure. Now, what are the most challenging trauma cases you've seen? You talked about the one with the grinder and the mini foreign bodies.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. The one I showed in Cordoba was a pretty challenging one.
Tell us about that case, because people haven't seen
it. This is an 18-year-old kid that came from Bolivia. It was his first day of job at a farm, and he was, I don't know exactly what he was doing, but at some point he cut a wire, and the wire just hit the eye very, very hard, and he got... When he arrived, he had limbus to limbus open globe laceration. He didn't have the iris. He didn't have the lens. Everything was out. And so initially, we just closed the eye. Then We waited a couple of days. We did ultrasound. The ultrasound showed that he had like a open, slightly closed funnel, retinal, total retinal detachment with the hemorrhagic choroidals. So at some point we did a small meeting with the other surgeons of our hospital and said, like, David, do you wanna try do something, or should we just eviscerate and prepare the patient like for a couple of weeks? And said, okay, let's try. I didn't have much expectations. And during the first, I don't know, hour and a half, you couldn't see anything. It was just like a big clot of blood in the posterior segment. And at some point I was able to see some retina, and with the help of PFCL, start opening and cutting the retina so it could regain their elasticity. And we were able to see the attached retina with the choroidals. So I couldn't, he had like three, he had 360 degrees
Wow.
choroidals. So I didn't leave the with silicone, that would have been my first choice, because I knew that when the choroidals resolved, then he would have underfilling of the with silicone. So I went with gas, 3C3F8, a little bit on the expansive,
Sure.
I don't know, it was like 18% or something. And I didn't have much expectations after the surgery, but he did really well and the retina attached. And so afterwards we decided, because he was like with a deep, like a very tough depression and even suicidal thinking and things, we decided to go a little bit further and suggest and plan on doing an IOL fixation with a human optics iris fixation to the lens and a PKP at the same time.
Wow, complete anterior segment reconstruction.
Completely, yeah. Well, I didn't do that all alone. The PKP
Yes,
was done
team.
by my cornea specialist, Arturo Cabagnaro, who's a great cornea specialist. And we usually get these tough cases together. And so sometimes we even work with the four hands inside the eye, which is
Wow.
really hard. And we didn't we don't even have to talk about it. It's like you need an extra hand, and he's holding the forceps on the other way around. So it's a very, very good team.
Well, so I'm so happy that you did everything possible, because this is a young child. It's like 18 is like a baby.
Yeah.
This
And
young boy.
last time we saw him, I don't know, maybe last week, he was very happy. The facial expression changed a lot. Like,
Yeah.
even though vision improved a little bit, he's 20/100, but it made a big difference.
For sure.
Also, the cosmetic part, he had like horrible scar just in the middle of the eye. It looked white, and now it's kind of normal.
But that's a very complicated then. So you had the artificial iris, the human optics artificial iris, and you have the IOL as well. So you fixated the iris to the IOL,
To the IOL, yeah. Also
and then
with
you.
cortex, and then through the haptics to the sclera.
Wow, and then that's with Gore-Tex. So that'll last forever, and then PKP on top of that because it
PKP on
kills
top of it.
corneas. Well, that's an amazing outcome. And then the retina's staying attached, hopefully.
And
Oh.
also in that last surgery, I also went into the retina and took out some PFCL that was left over from the second surgery. Yeah.
Wow.
So we did everything. It was vitrectomy, IOL fixation, and PKP at the same time.
Yeah, that's some incredible skill, this boy. And the good part is the 18-year-olds, they heal real nicely, right? He's a young,
Yeah.
healthy guy.
Yeah. Cornea is doing just fine. Vision has improved a little bit. Hopefully it's continuing improving a little bit more. And the psychological part also improved a lot, which made us really happy. Really
Right.
happy. Yeah.
He's so depressed and almost suicidal to smile on his face.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, sometimes we forget when you're that young, it's such a cosmetic thing is really important as well.
It
So.
is. I have another case of a young woman. She's 23, and she was carrying this plant with a. She works in gardens, so she was carrying a heavy plant, and she had scissor pointing up, and suddenly she dropped the plant, and the scissor went just way up into the eye. It was with a penetrating, and then went out through the temporal part of the retina. So it was perforating trauma, and it was a similar case. We went with the initial closure, then we went in to see how the retina was doing, and the retina was horrible. She had like the scissors. They touched from the macula to the temporal side where the wound opening was already closed when I went in. I managed to apply the retina, doing I don't know, 200 retinectomy in the inferior part, and I left her faced up with PFCL for 2 weeks. And
Wow.
the retina is still attached now. We're waiting to see if no PDR develops, and if the retina stays like that, we will probably do also an iris fix, an iris implant for cosmetic purposes. And she has this hand motion vision. She's not
Okay.
gonna recover more because the macula was
Damn.
totally damaged.
But for yeah,
But
for a
she's happy
pain.
with the outcome. She was
Yeah.
she knew that what she had was really, really bad. So she's happy that we are doing everything that we can do to help her.
No, for sure. Wow, that's a tough case. So for the a lot of young ophthalmologists listen to this podcast. They love it.
I
The young
know.
doctors, yeah, the young doctors.
Not only the young surgeons. I think everybody. You're like the like an international global mentor now, Uday,
Well,
which
we don't
I'm
need.
very thankful for it. I also follow your videos, and I've learned a lot.
Oh, thank you. We all learn together. But I think for a young ophthalmologist, especially if you're doing your residency, your training, what should go through your mind? You get called. Okay, there's a patient here with an intraocular foreign body or ruptured globe. But the advice for the young doctor, what should you do? What's your checklist? You're driving to the hospital to see the patient. What goes through your mind? What should you do in which order?
Well, first of all, it's closing the eye.
Okay.
If there is a way to take the intraocular foreign body that same day, you need to have a surgeon that can manage that. You need to have the equipment, and you have to have the scrubbers that knows how to work with the equipment. So sometimes in like general hospitals, the scrub nurse is not always on call. So also in my hospital, there's a lot of orthopedics and neurosurgery, but not a lot of ophthalmic nurses. So usually for doing the vitrectomy, we have to wait to the for the next day or something.
Right, that's why it's so important for the young doctors. You may be there Friday at midnight with a nurse who doesn't do ophthalmology.
You need to close the eye.
Yeah.
And closing the eye, it's also very important because what we usually learn in books, it's that for corneal wounds, we need to do sutures at the 90% thickness, right?
Okay. Yeah, that's the school, the textbook,
Yeah,
no?
so that so the new the new the no, I, it's not even new, but Dr. Ferenc Kuhnel described this long time ago, that you need to go and do 100% sutures in the cornea for trauma, because in trauma you won't get the cornea perfectly aligned if you try to go 90% deep. There's a study showing with an OCT that in one side it's 90 and the other one is 80, and that gap between both sides of the cornea will increase the edema. And you need the edema to go away as fast as you can, because then you need to do the retina surgery and you need a clear cornea.
So
So it's
you should you put the suture then 100%.
100%. And that
Well,
way
I gotta take notes here. This is news to me. I'm learning something here.
That's the way to do it. Yeah, it's a you have to do it 100 transfixating nylon sutures to the cornea, so you get the both sides of the cornea truly aligned. It's shown that it doesn't increase the risk of endophthalmitis, because after a couple of, I don't know, hours, the edema surrounds the suture in a way that it's hermetic, so it's not that you're gonna get bacteria or microorganism going up and down. And then the epithelium grows over the other sutures in the superior part, and it's isolated, so it works
okay,
better.
So this is completely changed my view. I this is news to me.
Really?
I'm really
new. Yeah.
So if I have a patient with, let's say, a large corneal laceration, I should put at least a few sutures at 100% depth to close it, and then I could put extra ones if I need to. So the first sutures will get it at the appropriate level.
Exactly.
Even.
Yeah.
Wow, so that's different than I learned. That's different than I taught.
Yeah, that's the way we were taught, but now it has been shown that it's better to do transfixating sutures for the cornea after trauma, where you cannot really tell exactly where the 90% is.
Wow. Okay. So yeah. So you agree with the other parts though? So suture the limbus first, right? If you have a cornea.
Yeah,
limbus first, because that's easy landmarks.
Yeah,
then you're using 9-0 nylon, 10-0 nylon.
Usually 10-0 nylon,
10-0
for
nylon.
The cornea. Yeah.
All right. And it then what do you prefer to suture for scleral lacerations? Rupture the scleral.
I prefer Vicryl.
Okay, like 8-0, 7-0.
Yeah, 7-0. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, but you can also use other.
Yeah, obviously very different teaching. Because the teaching was that if you do a full thickness corneal suture, that you'll have a track that you'll leak through. But you're saying no, it ends up sealing because you get corneal edema, it ends up sealing.
Yep, that was proven, and there's an amazing textbook of trauma of Ferenc Kuhn, which
yes,
like
for sure. Famous guy for trauma. Yes.
Yeah. And wow, there he describes it in detail. Also, Pepe Dalma from Mexico, he's also an amazing trauma surgeon. He always talks about this and teaches. It's a thing that we have to change in young surgeons.
I'm going to have to get a video from you and have to host it on Cataract Coach. If you have a video of this showing the full thickness sutures,
I look for one. Yeah, for sure I have one. I don't have one in mind, but I look for one. Yeah.
Don't worry. With your busy schedule, your busy operating room, you're gonna have one next week and the week after, and the next month.
Probably.
You'll have no shortage. Now it also seems that your patients, oftentimes, are very very young, right? So you're also 18, 23. We talked about these are like really young people.
Yeah.
With very devastating injuries.
Devastated injuries and managing the posterior pole in young patients,
it's tough.
Difficult. It's tough. The doing the vitreous detachment, it's much harder, and everything is more attached. So you have to be very careful not to create tears and damage.
Right. I'm sure if you need to do a vitrectomy for intraocular foreign body and you need to induce a PVD. In a 20-year-old, that's tough.
It is tough. And sometimes, taking the foreign body from the sclera, retina, and they do horrible PVRs, like much worse than the just retinal detachment PVRs, because there are other cell lines involved in this, the sclera, the sclera, choroid, and they do much worse.
What is the incidence? What percent of patients that have this retina trauma, retinal detachment from trauma, what percent get PVR?
Oh, it depends on the trauma. I think more than if it's depends on the timing of the surgery, depends on many factors. But
right.
Probably at least, I don't know, 15%, 10%.
Yeah, that becomes very aggressive PVR.
Yeah, very aggressive. It's much faster, and when you already have it, sometimes you cannot even peel it. It's just cutting retina, so you don't wanna get it. It's better to avoid it, and that's why many experienced trauma surgeons are doing prophylactic colorectomy around the impact zone.
Oh,
So just
interesting.
you just leave bare sclera.
So in the area, let's say you have this penetrating injury, let's say the peripheral retina, you do a focal, that localized retinectomy.
Exactly. Sometimes, not always, depends on the size of the wound and the surgeon, but there's a new trend of doing this retinal choroidectomy and leave bare sclera on the site.
Well, I think it kind of makes sense, especially if it's a small area and very peripheral retina. You're not losing much, and
No.
then you hopefully will prevent the bad PVR.
Exactly. That's the aim.
Wow, that's a tough case. Tough case. Okay, so let me go back. I'm learning so much today. This is amazing. So you have the young doctor, your young resident. You go get called to the operating room. You know your goal is to close the eye. Just close the eye.
Yeah, close the eye.
So let's talk.
And injections if there's an intraocular foreign body and nobody's going to see him for the next, I don't know, 48 hours. I think it's always good to put some intraocular antibiotics.
So just antibiotics. So what you would do is like what, vancomycin
Vancomycin, yeah.
or vanco, ceftaz, these kind of things. Okay, broad spec for prevention of endophthalmitis. Now, when you do a ruptured globe, let's say you suspect it's not a clean injury, like it was maybe some metal, some wood branch or tree or thorn or something. Do you also send a sample for culture at the same time or not?
Sometimes I think it's a good practice to do it, especially always when you have endophthalmitis, but not always when it's you don't have anything, yeah.
Okay, so the resident comes there to the clinic, the emergency department, seeing the patient. So first thing, let's say, make the patient NPO. So don't make sure they're not eating or drinking, so you can get anesthesia. So get a consent signed, and then what pearls do you have for examining the patient there? The patient has this injury; they don't want to open their eye. How are you going to examine them in the emergency department?
First of all, try not to press too much the eye because you don't know exactly where the wound is, and you might get some expulsion of intraocular tissue, which you don't want. So very gently check the eye. Try to check if you can get some vision, which is also a very good point because sometimes you get no light perception, and that's not a contraindication not to do surgery because sometimes you get good visions after not light perception in trauma.
Oh, so even if it's no light perception on the initial exam, you still must close the
You
globe.
should close the globe, and even after closing the globe, if it's still no light perception and there's hemorrhage, of course it's in a few days after. And I don't mean in a, I don't know, a year ago trauma, but a few days after, you should go in and try to see what's going on, and sometimes you would get surprises with some vision.
Right. So on these patients, you're preferring then general anesthesia for them?
Always,
Yes.
yeah. I prefer always general anesthesia, except if it's just a corneal laceration and you can do it just in the with topical or something. But yeah.
But if you don't know what's going on,
No, if
obviously.
you don't know what's going on with an inflamed eye and eyelids you can hardly open, it's better
Just do
to
general.
examine under general anesthesia.
Right, don't know for sure.
Also, it's good to get a CT scan always.
Right, so that's actually, let's talk about that, because the CT scan, you want to make sure you're doing it with thin cuts, and then if you can also do the cuts the normal way, but also these direct coronal cuts.
Yeah, coronal cuts. Yeah, it's always it's a very good tool to have, and you get information if there's an intraocular foreign body. Sometimes you can even see the retinal detachments, the choroidal hemorrhages,
Yeah,
the
it's good
size of
tool.
the volume of the globe,
Right.
or even the all things around the globe, the
Yeah,
orbit.
there's a lot of information you can learn from
There's a
doing the
lot of
obvious.
information. Sometimes you see the nerves that are already lacerated, so
Oh,
yeah,
yes.
or very inflamed, so you get that kind of information.
So you get to the patient out of the operating room, we do under general anesthesia. You obviously get the eye prepped or draped. Do you also sometimes need to take down, let's say, the lateral canthal tendon to get better exposure?
In small eyes or very inflamed eyes, you might have to do that. Not very common though, but
Or, bad lid swelling, you can't hardly even access the globe. For sure. Okay, so then when you start off doing this case, now let's say you see the most common that we saw was corneal scleral lacerations, or corneal scleral rupture. And do you recommend still a 360 peritomy to expose all the conch just to check the whole globe or just do
Not
focal?
always. If it's pretty clear that it's in one side, I would just open that side. If I
Okay,
have
just
any suspicion in other side, I will just go opening. If it's like ruptured globe and there's blood everywhere, like subconscious blood, then I would do 360.
now, what's your advice when the patient you expose the area of the corneal scleral rupture and they have some iris prolapse, which is very common?
Oh, that's a very good important point. You always have to try and save tissue. Like
Okay.
I know that in the it, I think it was the trend long time ago just to cut everything that came out the eye
Right,
initially.
right.
So now we try to save everything because sometimes even though it doesn't look very good outside the eye, it can help inside, like the iris, and
Right,
of
you can be
course.
surprised. You get it back inside there, you reposit the iris. Now,
And
sometimes
sometimes while pulling, you pull much more iris than what you were expecting. So it's important try to not put some visco and try to reposition it back in.
Right. Now, is there a limit if it's been outside the eye, like iris has been prolapsed there for a couple of days? Do you still want to save it?
Probably not. Probably it's gonna be like
What's the
dry
balance?
tissue, and you're gonna say it's not very good tissue. Yeah, if it's like dry and doesn't look like
But if it's relatively a fresh injury,
if it's a fresh injury, I would try always
safe
to
tissue.
leave it back in. Yeah.
And so now, before you start that, you should, like you were saying earlier, take a sample, maybe send it for culture. Maybe something will grow, maybe not, but at least you took the sample. And then the first suture, let's say a corneal scleral rupture, will be at
Limbus.
the limbus. How are you lining up the limbus? What suture will you put right there at the limbus?
You can put either the Vicryl or you can put a 9-0 nylon.
Right.
Usually for Limbus 10-0, it's a little bit
Not
too
strong.
thin.
That's right. So when you put that, I think that's probably your most important sutures. That one suture right there at the limbus, and you got to use those landmarks to make it as exact as you can.
As best as you can, yeah. Also with all the cornea sutures that we are talking about, it's very important not to do them too tight or too loose, and you start getting this astigmatism and these corneal irregularities that afterwards are gonna make more challenging to improve the vision.
Right. But
But
another
some
mistake.
but sometimes it's totally destroyed, and it's not a like one cut, it's very regular ones, and you have to do what you can.
Right.
It's not perfect. Trauma surgery, it's never perfect.
Well, that's the hard part, is that patients sometimes don't understand, no matter how incredible the surgeon is, like you can't make it normal.
No.
You can make it better, but it can never be normal. So I think that's one of the hard lessons, especially for a young patient to understand, like this is your eye is never going to be the same, no matter what. So you line up the one important suture there, and then if the laceration in the sclera heads further back, what pearls do you have to access more posterior?
So if you don't see exactly where does it finish and there's a muscle in some place in between, you have to
Take the muscle down.
detach the muscle and then look further. Don't lose the muscle, of course, then attach it back.
If you're a youngster, you don't understand the joke here. it's not, it's actually being very serious.
Yeah,
The extraocular muscles are actually, if you put your suture in there and you're not careful, you can have them, and you detach the muscle, it can retract into the orbit.
Into the orbit, yeah.
And good luck finding it now.
It's very hard, yeah. I haven't had that, but I've heard.
Yeah, I've heard too. Lucky I haven't seen it either. But so yeah,
it's very good for young surgeons to watch, also the pediatric surgeons that are amazing for this kind of muscle surgery, and you never know when you're going to need it.
Right. No.
You can have a trauma case, and you will learn it with the pediatrics.
For sure. You have to take down the muscle for sure if it goes back. One other thing we used to teach the residents was when you're suturing up the sclera, those individual sutures, we would tell them, while we're exploring back there, leave some of the suture ends very long.
So you can,
go over them.
Yeah. I like that. Yeah. I also use that for exploring further back.
Right. So, what we're saying is for the young doctors is leave the suture ends quite long, maybe 1 or 2 centimeters even. And then you can use that as to pull the globe. And retract the globe and get better exposure. And then at the end of the case, when you're all done, now you can cut the sutures down to very small.
But yeah, exactly. But it's also very important to start doing the sutures while you're before exploring further down, because sometimes they want to explore and see until where does the laceration gets, and then you get tissue coming out because you're pushing too much the eye. So start closing, and while you're advancing, start seeing further away.
Little by little.
And use the spatula to make the uvea back in, and sometimes vitreous. You can use the vitreous cutter to remove vitreous from outside. It's better than the vexel with the scissors always. And
if you're doing this and patient has this rupture on the sclera that goes posterior, and you go as much as you can, but you just somehow at the end of the case you can't get the eye to maintain pressure, so it's now what?
Sometimes you just have to wait, and you'll be surprised that a couple of days after the pressure goes back to normal by itself.
Yeah, we've seen that as well. So sometimes at the end of the case you're worried that it's so hypotenuse, but you've closed every rupture you saw. There may be something very, very far posterior, but oftentimes they just give it a few days, it'll be fine.
Well, hypotony is always the hardest thing to manage. Like glaucoma, you can always do something, but for hypotony, we get these cases there with the silicone oil, and they had the retinal detachment, and everything is fixed. The retina is in place, the eye looks okay, but they have zero pressure, and you have to leave them with the silicone oil, hoping someday the pressure will start raising up again.
Yeah, that becomes very, very challenging. And then, so now you see let's finish it for the resident case. So you finish this rupture of the sclera, you finish suturing the cornea. Now we know to do at least some of the sutures in the cornea 100%.
You can do them all. You can do them, yeah.
I'd almost be afraid to. It's so different than what I was taught, you know?
Yeah, I know. Like all of us were taught to do 90%, but that's, it's better 100.
Well, because in 100, you know, for sure.
You know that you're going to have the two pieces aligned together. If you do 90, you can get 90 and 80 or 60, and then you won't see it, but then the edema builds up because you get some stroma in the, in the interior part.
Yeah, some of the stroma is exposed to the aqueous.
Exactly.
And then you have edema forever.
Yep.
God, this is so interesting just to even think about this. But yeah, those are good points. And then now in the post-op period, at the end of the case, I think pretty much all of these, we would always inject at least, maybe intravitreal, but at least subconjunctival.
Yeah, for sure.
Antibiotics.
Yeah.
Are you also doing oral systemic antibiotics, IV initially or oral?
Yeah. Couple of days IV, and then we change to moxifloxacin oral.
So what are you giving in the IV? Some
also vancomycin, ceftazidime.
So okay, wow.
Yeah.
And then in the post-op period, give us some pearls here of managing the patients after surgery.
Well, it's
so we talk about hypotony. What about the other issue? Sometimes we'll put so much viscoelastic to get the iris back in the eye that you have a pressure of 50 the next day.
Yeah. Well, you can always if everything is okay, you can if the viscoelastic is the issue, just after cataract surgery, you can remove a little bit afterwards.
Right.
The slit lamp. You can always use the glaucoma drops and
Diamox.
Whatever.
Now,
a lot of steroids always.
Right. Yeah.
Prednisolone or dexamethasone and topical antibiotics.
So in a case like this, when would you plan the second procedure to go back to, let's say, fix some of the iris issues or fix a lens issue, cataract?
If it's just the lens and we're not having inflammation or phaconophylactic reactions, you can wait
months.
A lot. Yeah. Of course, the iris, you don't want to wait a lot sometimes because you get this atrophy and then you cannot suture it when it's very thin. So it's better trying to do it fast, especially if it's a dialysis in the periphery of the iris. You wanna suture it back faster.
Yeah, for sure.
Pupil can take longer if you want, but the iris root, I think it's better to try and attach it back again.
Now, the same patient, let's say, also had. Now you see, you close the globe. Luckily, the lens is not causing much inflammation. And now the patient, you examine patient after a week or two, you say, oh, now look at the posterior segment. Now I can see there's a detachment, there's vitreous hemorrhage. When do you plan on going back to fix that now?
As soon as I can. If there is a vitreous hemorrhage after trauma, I think it's the sooner the better because something bleeded. It could be the iris, which would be okay, but you can have a retinal tear, you can have a detachment, you can have many things, and the sooner you repair them, the better the outcome.
Wow, interesting.
But you need to have also good visualization. If the cornea is really dematous, then you're going to have a difficult surgery.
For sure. Now, when you do these cases, do you have a resident or fellow with you as well helping?
No, we don't have residents or fellow in this hospital. I hope.
Well, that'd be a great case to train. You should offer a 1-year ocular trauma fellowship. It'd be amazing.
Yeah. So usually it's me by myself or with another surgeon. Usually we try to do it with two.
Mm. Yeah.
So they always have a second opinion.
And four hands.
Yeah, four hands. And somebody said, like, yeah, it's okay. You did everything. There's nothing more to do. And you can, you know.
Call it, yeah.
Yeah. In tough cases, especially, it's a very good thing to have a good surgeon in your side.
Right. I forgot to say, probably the most important thing for a young doctor, a young resident who's doing these trauma cases, get your professor, get your consultant, get your attending.
Always.
You need to have someone to help you. Don't do this on your own. Don't suffer.
No. It's a different thing doing the trauma and the visualization. It's bad. You have to get used to it. You have to be able to see the retina with a biome, with a lens, contact lens. Like you have to, well, probably in everything, also in cataract, I think you need to learn all the techniques and then you choose which one it's better for you or for the case.
Yeah.
You have to be able to have all these tools in your skills and use it whenever you need them.
That is a great point. Well, David, can you believe it? We've been talking for 1 hour already.
Wow.
Time flies, you're having fun. And I think my most important lesson that I learned today.
The cornea.
It's okay to do 100% depth of corneal laceration exposure. That makes sense. I love it. Well, again, thank you so much for teaching us about all these ocular trauma cases. If you have any good cases, we'd love to feature them. Send me the video. I'll put it up on Cataract.
I'm going to send you some videos, and I'm also going to send you the video of the traumatic horse cataract.
Yeah. Oh, tell me. Oh, that's right. You had did a traumatic cataract in a horse.
Yeah.
I've never touched a horse. I have no idea. How do you do a horse eye cataract? I don't know.
Yeah, it's at the end of the day, it's the same, but much bigger.
It's
huge eye, huge lens. But also I learned that the preparation of the horse, it's they have this horrible inflammation, so they have to have antibiotics and everything 1 week before surgery. During the surgery in the BSS, you have to put tPA and heparin during the surgery
Oh,
because
wow.
they build up fibrin during surgery, if not. And
Wow.
after surgery, also they get steroids and antibiotics for another week, hospitalized. It's a little bit different, but very, very interesting.
That's something I've never seen before. Very interesting. Wow. Again, thank you so much for taking the time to be on our podcast. I really
Thank
appreciate it.
you. Thank you. It's been really great and an honor to be here.
Oh, thank you so much. I remind our listeners and viewers, remember, we've got a new Cattle Coach podcast every single Sunday on Apple, Amazon, Spotify, Google. Anywhere you find a podcast, you get the Cattle Coach podcast. Plus, of course, we have a new Cattle Coach video every single day. And coming up shortly will be some beautiful cataract trauma videos from David. Until next time, I'll catch you later.